Blog Talk Radio.
Arrested during the Saturday rallies,
with various offences. At least 5 people have lodged complaints with Scotland Yard about police violence against marchers. The Met said on Monday that it has charged 138 people in connection with the sit-in at Fortin and Mason luxury store for charges including aggravated trespass. However, the UK Uncut, which organized the sit-ins, dismissed any claims that those participating in the Fortin and Mason incident resorted to violence. This was not a protest by people wearing balaclavas and breaking things. It was a peaceful and mild-mannered gathering by people from all walks of life, teachers, hospital workers, charity workers, said Tom Matthews, a spokesperson for UK Uncut. People who took part now find themselves charged with a criminal offense simply for exercising their right to protest, he added. This comes as Tom Brake, MP, co-chairman of the Liberal Democratic Parliamentary Policy Committee on Home Affairs, Justice and Equalities, warned the government against a knee-jerk reaction to what happened. Clearly, there was a small minority who were out to cause trouble. We need to look into detail into whether the police had sufficient powers to tackle that or whether they can be deployed differently to ensure such violent scenes don't happen again, Brake said.
Yeah, these guys were actually, I saw a video on this, and these guys, the policemen were actually banging these guys up, you know, and without provocation.
Hmm.
And, yeah, they were just swinging bats and everything. They didn't give a shit who they hit. Or why, and that's what happened. Deliberate dumbing down of America.
Oh, we should play that.
Why not? Oh,
yeah,
geez, that's 12 minutes. But
let's play a little bit of it.
See how it goes. Yeah.
There's a little cartoon character here.
The deliberate dumbing down of America. Any review of typical
elementary school textbooks printed in before 1910 shows dramatically that students were learning mathematical skills that few of our current students know anything about.
This was by the Leipzig Foundation, Shortage of U.S. Educational Sabotage of the U.S. Educational System, by Paolo Leone.
A 1990 survey of college seniors showed 42% couldn't name the dates of the war between the states to within half a century. Something's wrong. Are kids dumber now than they were 100 years ago? And if so, why?
The educators say they need more money. And federal funding from 1969 to 1911 went up dramatically. Now by leaps and bounds. That didn't work. This is the story of deliberate dumbing down of
Once upon a time, there was a little girl named Maya. She was a bright, energetic young lady. Everybody thought Maya would do great things one day. Today was a special day. It was the first day of school, and Maya was looking forward to all the new things she would learn this year. But this year was not going to be exactly what Maya expected. Something was different this year. Something in school was not quite right. Maya was still learning how to read and write, and even though her homework was full of spelling mistakes, her teacher gave her a gold star. The teacher did not ask Maya to correct her spelling. Maya's mother asked the teacher why her daughter got a gold star. The teacher said that marking the spelling wrong would hurt the child's self-esteem. In the modern way of schooling, there was no right and no wrong. They now have a new way of spelling called invented spelling. She explained that the kids could spell words any way they liked. It's all correct because it's all creative. In some of the more advanced classes, they even used this method of no wrong or right in math. This way, 2 plus 2 could equal 5, and no one's feelings would be hurt. Even though this seemed odd to Maya's mother, she didn't question the teacher. After all, the teacher is the professional. Surely she knows what she's doing. By the second month of school, Maya came home looking very down. She no longer was as happy as she used to be. My mom didn't know that Maya was learning a subject called deaf education. All that talk about death gave Maya nightmares and made her nervous all the time. When her mom found out about deaf ed, it confused her. She didn't understand why young children were being taught about death. But she didn't say anything because, after all, the teacher was the professional. And surely, she knows what she is doing. On the sixth week of school, Maya's mom found a test in Maya's backpack. The test was marked, not to be taken home. Her mom looked over the test and found questions about her personal thoughts. Do you sometimes get nervous talking in front of class? Do you ever get depressed? Do you feel like your parents are abusing you? Upon further research, Maya's mom found out that this was a psychological test given to the students without the parents' consent. The kids were offered pizza or movie tickets if they filled out all the answers. Investigating further, she found out that if the child was evaluated as high risk for depression, she would be sent to the school counselor, who would then tell the parents that the child needed medication. She also found out that most of the kids taking the test had mental problems and that they would all be asked to see the psychologist. Maya's mother was alone.
Hey, Lila doesn't think that this is true stuff.
No.
She works in the system as a counselor, and she knows better.
First of all, I never see kids with, unless it's an emergency, without letting parents know, and then I call them. And schools can't recommend medication. It's against the law. You go to a doctor.
Yeah. This is going to be something
that,
weird.
That whole thing is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't know of any school. I only work in New England, so I don't know of any school in New England that would behave like that. So I think that's absolute horse feathers, and whoever put that together is fooling you all.
Yeah, doing a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
Obama administration restricts findings on Gulf's dead dolphins.
Mm.
The Obama administration has issued a gag order on data over this recent spike of dead dolphins, including many stillborn infants washing up on Mississippi and Alabama shorelines. And scientists say the restriction undermines the scientific process. As abnormal dolphin mortality this year alone, the Gulf Coast has become part of the federal criminal investigation over last year's BP oil spill disaster, and as a result, has led the U.S. government to clamp down on biologists' findings with orders to keep the results confidential. They've killed the Gulf, you know, all the people.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of them?
Unfortunately.
There it is.
You get it?
I think so.
There it is. Exit out.
There we go.
Reuters obtained.
Wait.
Reuters.
No.
Where were you? Where was your last?
Right there.
Right. The dolphin die-off labeled an unusual mortality event, or UME, resulted in wildlife biologists being contacted by the National Marine Fisheries Service to record the recent spike in dolphin deaths by collecting tissue samples and specimens for the agency, but late last month were privately ordered to keep their results under wraps. Reuters obtained a copy of the agency letter that states in part, because of the seriousness of the legal case, no data or findings may be released, presented, or discussed outside the UME investigative team without prior approval. One biologist involved with tracking dolphins' mortalities for over 200 years and speaking on the condition of anonymity told Reuters that it throws the accountability right out the window. We are confused and we are angry because they claim they want teamwork, but at the same time they are leaving the marine experts out of the loop completely.
Some scientists said they have received a personal rebuke from government officials about speaking out of turn to the media over attempts at determining the dolphin's death. Additionally, these scientists say that collected specimens and samples are being turned over to the government for evaluation under a deal that omits independent scientists from the final result of lab tests. Almost 200 dead bottlenose dolphin bodies have been found since mid-January through this week along shores of the Gulf Coast states, including Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, Reuters notes, about half of the carcasses are newborns or stillborn infants. That number is about 14 times the average numbers recorded during the same time frame during 2002 and 2007. This coincided occurred.
Coincidentally occurred.
Yeah, during the first calving season, since the BP Deepwater Horizon debacle last year in the Gulf. Although many of the dolphin specimens recently collected now show no sign of oil contamination, lab analysis is crucial in helping to determine their deaths. And I'm sure it's probably not oil, but it's that coexit shit.
Some experts believe the recent surge of deaths is the result of dolphins inhaling or ingesting oil during the oil spill, the results of which are now just beginning to show their toll, including a possible upsurge in dolphin miscarriage. The recent spike in dolphin deaths has compounded the dolphin mortality problem, as scientists were already busy attempting to determine the deaths of nearly 90 dead dolphins, mostly adults, that washed up along the U.S. Gulf Coast during the weeks and months after the BP disaster. Some are questioning the Marine Fisheries Service, part of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and its delay in providing dolphin samples to laboratories. It is surprising that it has been almost a full year since the spill, and they still haven't selected labs for this kind of work, said Ruth Carmichael of the independent Dauphin Island Sea Lab, located in Alabama, according to Reuters. I can only hope that this process is a good thing. I just don't know. This is an unfortunate situation, she added. Officials with NOAA state the confidentiality measures are an integral part of the current investigation over the BP spill. We are treating the evidence, which are dolphin samples, like a murder case, said Dr. Aaron Poigers, a Fishery Service marine biologist, Reuters notes. The chain of custody is being closely watched. Every dolphin sample is considered evidence in the BP case now, she added.
Okay. Yep. Oh, BP executives could face manslaughter charges.
Oh, let's read that.
Interesting.
What do you think, folks?
That would be incredible.
And this is from, where's this from?
This is a Digital Journal.
Okay. Washington.
Yeah. The BP executives could face manslaughter charges.
Oh, there's that guy. I just want to step on his face.
Washington. U.S. prosecutors are assessing whether to pursue manslaughter charges against BP company managers over last year's Gulf of Mexico fiasco that took the lives of 11 workers and created the largest environmental disaster in the country's history. Government officials are studying activities conducted by BP managers both onshore and at the Deepwater Horizon rig prior to last year's explosion to determine charges of involuntary manslaughter or seaman's manslaughter.
Additionally, the statements made over the doomed well by the company leaders during last year's congressional hearings are being investigated to determine a possible link of prior knowledge, according to people familiar with the case who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Although the oil giant has admitted to mistakes made in the run-up to the Macondo well blowout, the company denies any accusations of being grossly negligent, a charge that would add tens of billions of dollars to its liability over the catastrophe. A civil lawsuit was filed by the Justice Department in December against BP and eight other defendants, but has yet to file criminal charges pending the ongoing investigation. David Ullman, a former chief of environmental crimes section at the Justice Department, said he expects companies involved in the disaster would see Siemens manslaughter charges as a case against individual leaders is a more difficult case, according to Bloomberg. Jane Barrett, law professor at the University of Maryland, said they typically don't prosecute employees of large corporations, Bloomberg notes, but individual charges could be significant for environmental safety cases leading to a changed behavior. You've got to prosecute the individuals in order to maximize and not lose the deterrent effect, she added. Under scrutiny are company emails, additional documents to help determine BP's prior knowledge when company officials testified before Congress last June and whether pertinent information was withheld.
If found grossly negligent, the company could be maximum possible fines reaching to more than $21 billion. Furthermore, the company might then be faced with the challenge of forcing its partners in the well operation to pay their 35% portion of the total cleanup bill, now estimated at $42 billion. Manslaughter charges could also open the door to additional legal claims totaling billions more. And BP has declined comment, but amid the growing speculation, BP shares fell 2.2% on Tuesday, their steepest drop since January. The BP's in hot shit. I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, me too.
I just hope that they follow through on this and, you know, really works. Oh, this is interesting. Rebellion.
Michigan is screwed.
Rebellion hits America. Michigan governor goes Gaddafi. Massive tax increases passed on poor and elderly. Taxes on rich and corporations cut by almost $2 billion. Jesus Christ. Elections to be suspended. Officials summarily dismissed by corporate overseers.
Civil rights, due process, and constitutional guarantees end. Michigan has, in fact, seceded from the union. Let's see what they say on that video.
Yeah.
It's actually in Michigan where this is maybe the most stark and the most amazing. In Michigan, the new Republican governor is a man named Rick Snyder. Rick Snyder does not get a lot of national attention, but boy, howdy, he ought to. What Governor Snyder is doing, I think, tells you in particular how clueless the Beltway press has been about what is actually happening in the states right now in Republican politics. If you listen to the Beltway press, even those who are willing to be critical of the Republicans, they say things like, well, real fiscal conservatives would consider raising taxes as well as cutting spending to address their state's budget shortfalls. That is actually happening in some of these places. Look at what they're trying to do in Michigan. Rick Snyder has proposed an actual tax increase. Michigan has a budget problem, so he's going to do the responsible thing, right? He's going to raise taxes. He's going to raise taxes on seniors and on poor people. $1.7 billion in tax hikes for Michigan's seniors and Michigan's poor people, and for people who want to make a tax-deductible donation to public universities. Sorry, you know, Michigan has a budget problem. We're going to have to raise a whole lot of money from you. Poor people, old people, people supporting public schooling, you have to take the hit because the state needs to save that money. Is the state saving that money? No, the state is not. Governor Snyder is taking all of that money that the state will gain, and he is not using it to close the budget gap. He is giving it away in the form of $1.8 billion in corporate tax cuts. He's taking in $1.7 billion in higher taxes from poor people and old people and giving it away, $1.8 billion to businesses. Net short-term effect on the state's budget? Zero or worse. It is not about the budget. It is really not. It is not about the budget in Wisconsin. It is not about the budget in Florida. It is not about the budget in Ohio. It is not about the budget in Michigan. But what Michiganders know, and what Michiganders have been trying to get the rest of the country to pay attention to, is that what these Republicans are doing in the states is not just not about the budget. It's about something way worse than that. Stay with me for a moment here. There is more to this. Why are these people in Michigan so mad? It's not just because they haven't won yet, like the protesters in Wisconsin have. It's because Michigan Republicans are telling them that they are about to lose their right to elect local government. The governor's just going to take care of that from now on. See, the governor knows best. This whole democracy thing, turns out, it's very inefficient. And haven't you heard? There's a crisis. Big government conservatism gets really, really, really astonishingly big. That's next. The Michigan House has already passed, and the Michigan Senate is about to pass a bill that sounds like it is out of a dystopian leftist novel from the future. If you think that Republican governors around the country are using fiscal crisis as a pretext to do stuff they otherwise want to do, this is something I don't think I ever would have believed Republicans even wanted to do, but this is what they're proposing. And this hasn't really gotten much national attention, but please just check this out. Governor Rick Snyder's budget in Michigan is expected to cut aid to cities and towns so much that a lot of cities and towns in Michigan are expected to be in dire financial straits. Right now, Governor Snyder is pushing a bill that would give himself, Governor Snyder and his administration the power to declare any town or school district to be in a financial emergency. If a town was declared by the governor and his administration to be in a financial emergency, they would get to put somebody in charge of that town. And they want to give that emergency manager they've just put in charge of the town the power to, quote, reject, modify, or terminate any contracts the town may have entered into, including any collective bargaining agreements. So this emergency person who gets put in charge of a town deemed to be in financial crisis by the governor's administration, this emergency person gets to strip the town of union rights unilaterally by their own personal authority. But this emergency person also gets the power under this bill to suspend or dismiss elected officials. Think about that for a second. Doesn't matter who you voted for in Michigan. Doesn't matter who you elected. Your elected local government can be dismissed at will. The emergency person sent in by the Rick Snyder administration could recommend that a school district be absorbed into another school district. That emergency person is also granted power specifically to disincorporate or dissolve entire city governments.
Oh, my God.
What year was your town founded? Does it say so, like on the town border as you drive into your town? Does it say what year your town was founded? What did your town's founding fathers and founding mothers have to go through in order to incorporate your town? Republicans in Michigan want to be able to unilaterally abolish your town and disincorporate it, regardless of what you as a resident of that town think about it. You don't even have the right to express an opinion about it through your locally elected officials who represent you, because the Republicans in Michigan say they reserve the right to dismiss your measly elected officials and to do what they want instead because they know best. The version of this bill that passed the Republican-controlled Michigan House said it was fine for this emergency power to declare a fiscal emergency, invoking all of these extreme powers. It was fine for that power to be held by a corporation. So swaths of Michigan could, at the governor's disposal, be handed over to the discretion of a company. You still want your town to exist? Take it up with the board of directors of this corporation that will be overseeing your future now. Or rather, don't take it up with them. Frankly, they're not interested. Instead of thinking of Michigan as the upper and lower peninsula, let's just consider the prospect of Amway Stan, right? The area between Pontiac and Flint could be a nice Dow Chemicalville, maybe. The power to overrule and suspend elected government justified by a financial emergency. Oh, and how do you know when you're in a financial emergency? Because the governor tells you you're in a financial emergency. Or a company he hires to do so does that instead. The Senate version of the bill in Michigan says it has to be humans declaring your fiscal emergency. The House bill says a firm can do that just as well. This is about a lot of things. This is not about a budget. This is using or fabricating crisis to push for an agenda you'd never be able to sell under normal circumstances. And so you have to convince everyone that these are not normal circumstances. These are desperate circumstances, and your desperate measures are therefore somehow required. What this is has a name. It is called shock doctrine.
Wow. That is really scary.
Yeah, extreme. Yeah, really extreme. That was the mate, Rachel Maddow, actually, on YouTube. You can check that out. And, of course, I'm using the fair use doctrine here, to fair use law, and providing our listeners with some of Rachel Maddow's talk. So there. Let's see. Does this make any sense? Yeah.
Chemtrails. Don't talk about the weather.
Let's add some words of wisdom here provided by the David Icke site. Yeah. Most difficult phase of life is not when you understand, when one understands you. It's when you don't understand yourself. So
the secret of happiness is freedom. The secret of freedom is courage. Facilities.
Be who you are and say what you feel, because those who mind don't matter, and those who matter don't mind. Dr. Seuss.
It's better to be hated for what you are than to be loved for something that you are not. Andre Gide, or Guide.
Yeah. Than to be loved for something you are not. Yeah, that's for true. Man cannot discover new oceans unless he has the courage to lose sight of the shore. Andre Gide. And chemtrails don't talk about the weather.
So look at that, those crisscross hatches in the sky.
This is a little too long.
Yeah, it's a long one.
Let's see.
You'll probably find that on YouTube, folks.
Yeah, YouTube is Don't Talk About the Weather, Part 1. I think I've seen this too.
Japan to make citizens pay bill for TEPCO's nuclear radioactive fallout.
Crooked Japanese politicians are taking steps to let TEPCO off the hook for the measly $1.2 billion in liabilities it faces for Japan nuclear fallout disaster, and it instead makes the citizens of Japan pay the bill. If a similar disaster happened in your country, you'd be paying the bill as well. It seems to be a recurring theme in modern capitalist society. Greedy corporations bend taxpayers over the barrel at every possible corner, raking in massive record-breaking profits. Then, when the shit hits the fan and it's time for greedy corporations to take a loss, crooked politicians step up and say, "Don't worry about it, buddy. I'm on your payroll. We'll make that taxpayer foot the bill." And that's what they're doing in China.
So we have the Japan
tax. Wait a minute. Consider the history. For example, the U.S. Congress robbed $400 million from Hurricane Katrina victims to pay for the BP Gulf oil spill. The General Motors bailout, the Wall Street bailout, financial crisis of 2008, numerous banks failed and all stockholders were ripped off of their life savings. Really?
The list goes on. It was the same kind of fraud that caused the Great Depression. Now Japan is following the great example set by the U.S. government.
Japan considers temporarily nationalizing TEPCO. According to Japanese newspaper Yomiuri, authorities in Tokyo are considering a temporary nationalization of TEPCO, the operator of the troubled nuclear plant. The Google Translate version of the article is coherent, but the details are a little unclear, and it's clear that this is not a sure thing. The key thing to bear in mind is that TEPCO has always enjoyed the implicit backstop from the government. That's to pre-existing regulation on nuclear power in Japan. And in Monday trading, TEPCO CDs exploded higher thanks to the perception that the relationship between the operator and the government were fraying.
Time to dump TEPCO CDs. Japan considering nationalization of most recent. You went too fast.
Oh,
of most recent TBTF Club Entrant.
Where are you reading?
Per Yomiuri, TEPCO may be up for nationalization precisely as we had predicted due to the insurmountable amount of accrued liabilities from the Fukushima disaster, which would bury a standalone company. And just as we rode the CDs on the way up from 90 to 460, so now it's time to assume that there will be no credit risk whatsoever. Now that TEPCO is the first ever Japanese non-bank TBTF, time to bail as central planning is about to branch out from Yomiuri.
That just goes on.
Yeah.
It's just a
liability cap on Canada's nuclear plants. It said, like ours. Keep going, Leo.
Here's something here. Japan and TEPCO's history of nuclear accidents and cover-ups.
Ooh.
That'd be interesting. Bungling cover-ups define Japanese nuclear power. Let's see, there's a 3-minute video here on this.
Back to anybody, wasn't it?
An explosion was heard and smoke seen at the power plant this morning, and here it is.
This is a BBC report.
It shows the picture of the smoke.
And as we watch that, Malcolm Grimston, what are your thoughts?
It's still speculating. One possibility of that is a hydrogen oxygen explosion. That's quite an energetic one. Or some sort of chemical explosion from the, you know, they do use oil and other things within the plant. But that's a big explosion. I very strongly suspect that's not an actual nuclear explosion in the sense the nuclear materials were involved in that. The issue is that if that's damaged the containment, the nuclear materials may be able to escape from that. Because this far into the accident, it's very difficult to imagine that the nuclear process could restart, although that is certainly something which will be investigated.
What strikes people, I'm sure, about watching a couple of things, as you say, whether that has caused damage in itself. I mean, presumably, at a plant like that, an explosion is something you want to avoid.
Well, an explosion of that size is serious. There's no doubt about that. And if it depends on, firstly, whether it was actually an explosion within the containment, which we just don't know as yet. One thing we do know is that if that did involve the nuclear thing, we'll be seeing very high levels of contamination very quickly. So information should be becoming available as to what type of explosion it was. But clearly that's a very energetic explosion to be doing that. We're not looking here at something collapsing because of the effects of the earthquake, which was one possibility, but that's clearly not the case.
And we've had pictures of this site before what happened and then afterwards, and after this explosion it appears that we see, instead of an intact building, as you would expect, you then see a sort of skeletal structure there where the walls have crumbled. And as you say, we're speculating at this distance and this stage and at this time, but significant damage has been caused.
Yeah, and in most plants, the actual working part is built underground. So anything above the surface is mainly just empty space to allow things like the cranes in maintenance and the like. So the real question is not what we can see here, but what's just underneath the surface of what we can see here. And kind of what I've no doubt they'll start doing is trying to get a view from looking down into the reactor, which, and some of those techniques were developed at Chernobyl, where there was some aerial plant that folks looking down gave a much clearer idea of what was happening.
Yeah. Now, we understand there has been a press conference in the last few minutes. I'm just looking through the wires here at some of the comments that have been made. The official line is it's not clear if the damaged building housed the reactor. An official said the utility that runs the plant was reporting several workers may have been injured, and we saw the power of that explosion there, which is perhaps not surprising. The big question now, of course, as you were saying, Malcolm, is about the radiation levels. Now, how quickly could that be detected? I mean, would they know immediately?
Well, within a few minutes, I'd have thought, because they will have, nuclear sites of their nature have very sophisticated monitoring, because that's often your early warning as to whether something, not on this scale, but a small anomaly may be happening. So they'll have very sensitive material in real time there, assuming that those...
Okay.
Kind of scary stuff.
Yeah, it's really bad.
They're trying to keep it all from us.
Yeah. And these guys have had a lot of problems in the past. 1999, fuel reprocessing workers were reported to be using stainless steel buckets to hand mix uranium in flagrant violation of safety standards at the Tokamura plant. Two workers later died in what was the deadliest accident in Japanese industry history. These 37 workers were exposed to low doses of radiation at a 1997 fire and explosions at a nuclear reprocessing plant operated in Tokamura, the northeast of Tokyo. The operator, Donan, later acknowledged it had initially suppressed information about the fire. Hundreds of people were exposed to radiation and thousands evacuated in a more serious 1999 Tokamura accident involving JCO company. The government assigned the accident to level 4 rating on the International Nuclear Event Scale, ranging from 1 to 7, and 7 being most serious. In 2007, a powerful earthquake ripped into Japan's northwest coast, killing at least 8 people and causing malfunctions at the Kawasaki Kariwa nuclear power plant, including radioactive water spills, pipe bursts.
Oh, Kashiwazaki.
Kariwa. Okay. Burst pipes and fires. Radiation did not leak from the
facility.
Yeah. TEPCO has safety violations that stretch back decades. In 1978, control rods in one of Fukushima reactor dislodged, but the accident was not reported because utilities were not required to notify the government of such accidents. In 2006, TEPCO reported a negligible amount of radioactive steam seeped from the Fukushima plant and blew beyond the compound. So
blowing over here.
Yeah, so these bastards have been in trouble for a long freaking time.
Bad track record.
Yeah. So let's go back.
That's
here.
Really sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, oh, boy.
Of course, they want to raise the freaking acceptable radiation levels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Transhumanism, the new phase of eugenics.
Okay, I can read that.
Transhumanism has a variety of definitions and became made to appear in just as innocuous notion. We're plagued with mechanization and digitalization. It moves information, ourselves, our economy. How can it be bad? Why not use it to enhance our capabilities? Yeah, but where do you draw the line? What's really going on?
Want to check that one out?
Yeah, let's check this one out.
Eugenics, folks. Before it's news. My wife sent me a photo of this book cover, and the book shows eugenics, half person, half machine. Oh, this is Christina Aguilera's new cover, album cover.
Huh.
The face of new eugenics, Christina Aguilera. She's got half her face.
Bionic, it's
bionic. And my wife sent me a photo of this book cover from an airplane magazine. I haven't read the book, but I can tell already he's on target, or at least in his approach is broaching
an important subject
with some urgency, especially when reviewers say it's not as close as he thinks, but he makes some good points.
Worldwide mind, the coming integration of humanity, machines, and the internet. What is transhumanism?
That's the name of the book, by Michael Koros.
Koros.
Worldwide mind.
Let's see. Transhumanism has a variety of definitions and can be made to appear as just as an innocuous notion. We're plagued with mechanization and digitalization. It moves information, ourselves, our economy. How can it be bad? Why not use it to enhance our capabilities? Yeah, but where do you draw the line? What's really going on? Wiki says, transhumanist vision of transformed future humanity, which is influenced by the techno-utopia depicted in some great works of science fiction, has attracted many supporters and detractors from a worldwide range of perspectives. Transhumanism has been condemned by one critic, Francis Fukuyama, as the world's most dangerous idea, while one proponent, Ronald Bailey, counters that it is the movement that epitomizes the most daring, courageous, imaginative, and idealistic aspirations of humanity. Okay.
This is all from Brzezinski, by the way. I'm surprised they didn't say that. Mm-hmm. That was from his Technotronics.
Okay.
The Technotronic era.
Make it look like there's some discussion on the matter, blah, blah, blah. In reality, it's all over the place and getting shoved down our throats. As the wave of the future, from commercials to pop stars to military breakthroughs, we're seeing the robotization agenda in full swing. It's a definite dehumanizing trend that is being programmed into an unsuspecting human population. Hal Robart, Iron Man movie character, and Sarko's XOS, military exoskeletons, now icons. But it's helping us. The impetus for the bionic body gains its momentum from the health care faction. They are wonderful inventions.
From
the health care scare faction. They are wonderful inventions to help humanity, no doubt. But just like splitting the atom can go both ways, so does everything. And right now, the controllers are ruling. They have the technology to help the blind see, the immobilized move, replace missing limbs. But don't be fooled. The PTBs are always way out to control, period. More Than Human by Ramaz Nam, embracing the promise of biological enhancement. More popular literature on the subject. Fact is, you see it everywhere. There's new mechanized apparatus every day for some new improvement. Do you think things are improving? Sure, things run quicker and faster, but where? Does it matter? Has efficiency become the drug of choice as long as we're numb and dumb to the effects? Are we letting our humanity be erased out of expediency and our lack of willingness to deal with the reality of what's happening?
Origins of the transhumanist agenda. Transhumanism is essentially eugenics. It's the lessening of the human factor in humanity for the sake of the few who control. And there's a terrific quote on the profound impact of the transhumanist agenda. Julian Huxley, brother of Aldous, who authored Brave New World, first used this word transhumanism. Huxley was a member of the British Eugenics Society, eugenics being the foundation of transhumanism. And eugenics is a science dedicated to a Darwinist philosophy applied to humanity, that the strong should thrive and evolve until the weak are culled and eradicated. Eugenics rests on a necessity of there being superior and inferior genetic pools in the human population. It might be very socially unacceptable to speak publicly of being here, there being some races, ethnic or cultural groups who are inferior to the rest. Yet in secrecy, this is exactly what elite eugenicists believe. And the public is guided to love the idea of transhumanism by being persuaded that it is not a goal achieved through race or ethnicity, but simply a means of bettering all of humanity. This is quite untrue. Elite transhumanists have no desire to evolve all humankind. Their goal is one which seeks to advance only their own bloodlines and to leave the rest in disadvantage to them, so that these unfortunate ones have no choice but to become their slaves, their lab animals, and their labor force. The lowest strata are producing too fast. Therefore, they must not say they must not have too easy access to relief or hospital treatment, lest the removal of the last check on natural selection should make it too easy for children to be produced or to survive. A long unemployment should be a ground for sterilization. Julian Huxley. Elite are all wrongly called, are blood relations of one another, descending from the hybrid tyrants who ruled in times of the same transhumanist philosophy pre-flood. Interesting. So,
Huxley's having the inside scoop is no accident. Speaking of Julian Huxley, yes. He's brother of Aldous, foretelling author of Brave New World that also just happened to cover this very subject, with precognitive awareness of the coming pharmaceutically adapted, genetically sculpted society and more. Amen. Elite geniuses or co-conspirators in constructing the Brave New World order, they've written, not misspelled. As David Icke says, these bloodlines have other dimensional capability and connections that enable them to see down the timelines to the future events. Somehow the Huxley boys, George Orwell, H.G. Wells, Darwin, and many others have the inside scoop or agenda talking points. Think about it.
And so does...
Insider Hollywood.
And so does the cult Insider Hollywood, its programming. Hollywood productions are not mere entertainment. It's a form of psycho-entertainment, teaching humanity to resonate with whatever themes and memes are it wishes to introduce into the human consciousness. Ooh. And transhumanism is huge in their agenda.
Mm.
I remember the Terminator.
Meet the Huskleys.
Let's meet them. Let's see their faces.
Oh, funny-looking guys. Sir Julian Sorrell Huxley.
Nobel Prizes have freakish success stories and are involved in nature's preservation groups. It's all in their giant game of risk, their play for future world domination, and we are just expendable pawns in their eyes. He was a proponent of natural selection and a leading figure in the mid-20th century evolutionary synthesis. He was a secretary of the Zoological Society of London, first director of UNESCO, and a founding member of
The Wildlife Fund.
UNESCO. Isn't that a fund for kids?
Yeah. Julian Huxley came from the distinguished Huxley family. His brother was the writer Aldous, and his half-brother, a fellow biologist and Nobel laureate, Andrew Huxley. His father was a writer and editor, Leonard Huxley, and his paternal grandfather was Thomas Henry Huxley, a friend and supporter of Charles Darwin and a proponent of evolution. his maternal grandfather was the academic Tom Arnold, great-uncle poet Matthew Arnold, and great-great-grandfather. A lot of connections there, distinguished, by the way, by the same elites who put them there. What a scam! People are groomed to worship their destroyers. It also says Huxley was well known for his presentation of science in books and articles and on radio and television. He was awarded UNESCO's Kalinga Prize for the popularization of science in 1953, the Darwin Medal of the Royal Society in 1956, and the Darwin Wallace Medal of the Linnaean Society in 1958. He was also knighted in the same year, 1958, 100 years after Charles Darwin and Ralph and Alfred Russel Wallace announced the theory of evolution by natural selection. In 1959, he received a special award of the Lasker Foundation in the category Planned Parenthood World Population. Huxley was a prominent member of the British Eugenics Society and its president from 1959 to 1962.
And he was given the UNESCO's prize, Kalinga Prize.
Eugenics at the inception.
Yeah.
Interesting. You think Darwinism, Brave New World, eugenics, and transhumanism might have some common threads? And on role the agenda. See the Bill Gates of Hell Foundation for a mega eugenicist.
Yeah. And the elite thinks they know better. Check your Georgia Guidestones again. This is something that this is what John was reading the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And please fully wake up and take action. This is not information to tickle the ears. Thanks. We each influence many and do make a mighty difference.
The ancient ambition of the dark empire of the secret societies, the Great Plan, is the establishment of an occult hierarchy that presides over a long dream for a one-world government, one-world religion. That is, the occult hierarchy ruling directly and in full public view as the supreme leaders of the Novus Ordo Seclorum, the New World Order. Freemasonry has been superbly cultivated by the Black Adepts. Secret leaders of the New World Order plan to become the main vehicle of the externalization of the occult hierarchy. Manly P. Hall.
Hmm.
Don't you have some books by Manly
P. Hall? Yeah, well, I did a number of programs on his lectures. That's it for that one.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so. Now, let's see, we've got about 8 minutes here, so.
Let's see if we can find something to play that might be interesting.
Point of no return as radioactive core melts through.
Well, we can play something. PSA fires wicked worker for casting a spell on co-workers. Oh, this is funny. The assistant director told her he was investigating a threat of workplace violence. He said that a foreigner mentor on the job training, Officer Mary Bagnoli, reported that she was afraid of Smith because she was a witch who practiced witchcraft. She accused Smith of following her on the highway one snowy evening after work and casting a spell in the heater of her car, causing it not to work.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Whistleblowing witch grounded by TSA. Wiccan is fired after complaining about casting spells and after she complained about tax security, a lax security at the airport.
Okay, here it is. We got to play this.
Okay.
Airport security officer Carol Smith was fired from the TSA after a coworker accused her of witchcraft and putting a hex on her car. Her termination also came after she complained about lax security. Investigative reporter Bill Deadman of MSNBC has come...
Let's check this out.
We need a little humor.
GFT is a worldwide leader in currency trading. Use our award-winning software and high-performance analysis.
Just move forward.
Yeah,
it's
just
don't.
GFT is a worldwide leader in currency.
I got you one way or the other. You're going to have to listen to that crap.
Just push the thing all the way forward. Right there. This little button right here.
Just
go push it all the way forward, and that'll be the end of it.
Okay.
people. Trade 24.
They won't let you do it.
4 hours a day, 5.5 days a week. Call us. We're on hand to answer your questions anytime. Open your free practice account now at gftforex.com. GFT, the worldwide leader in currency trading.
Okay. I'll never listen to these things again, though.
Carol Smith worked as a TSA officer at New York's Albany International Airport.
Oh, that's
she was one of the best at finding weapons and drugs. Then she was fired after one of her coworkers made an unusual allegation.
That I had put a spell on the heater, that I had cast a spell on the heater of her car, and she was afraid of me because I'm Wiccan and I practice witchcraft. This is my favorite. The crystal ball.
Carol does practice Wicca, but denied she had anything to do with hexes.
No. If I could do that, if I had the power and really thought that I could do something like that, I wouldn't have been working for TSA.
The investigator agreed that the allegation was bogus, but still the TSA listed the incident as a reason for firing her. The TSA also said she had been late, had left for a break without permission, and had yelled at a supervisor when told that she'd have to work a 16-hour shift because she was the only female officer on duty to pat down female passengers. Her personnel file shows something else. She repeatedly made complaints about lax security at the airport.
The metal detector's here, the x-ray machine here, and in between there's like a gate. And there was one supervisor that every time he would walk through there, he would never close it, the gate. So I did file a complaint about it with management, which it never stopped anyway. So management never did anything.
When Smith was accused of casting spells, the boss's suggestion was that she go to a mediation session to explain her religion, to dispel any misconceptions about her beliefs. Smith said a Jewish or Catholic employee wouldn't have had to do that.
I'm supposed to explain to her my religious beliefs. No. I refuse.
She has a sense of humor about the popular view of witches. She once wore a witch's costume to a Halloween party, and she loved Wicked on Broadway.
You know, there were a couple comments were made about wearing a robe and a magic wand and a pointed hat and all this stuff to work, or where'd I park my broom, stuff like that, which, you know, you can kind of laugh that stuff off.
After the allegation of casting spells, the harassment started affecting her job. She complained to supervisors, but they did nothing.
If I would call for a bag check on x-ray, I couldn't get anybody to come over until a man, or, you know, one of the supervisors would have to send someone over to check the bag. And then they'd look at the x-ray picture and say, oh, you mean that? It's nothing, no big deal. And I'd be like, yeah, it is. And actually have to demand them search the bag.
After she was fired, Smith filed a religious discrimination complaint. She represented herself, and the judge ruled against her, saying she hadn't complained early enough that the harassment was based on religion. She has appealed and plans to have a lawyer next time. She'd like to get her job back, but if nothing else, she wants people to know that witches are not dangerous.
It's very similar to Native American beliefs. It's very nature-oriented. We have a great respect, well, speaking for myself, great respect for nature, for everything living. We don't cast spells on people. We don't try to do harm to people at all.
For MSNBC.com, I'm Bill Dedman.
That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
Smith said a Jewish or...
That's what happens to you. If you try to be a, you know, try to do something.
Outside of the mainstream.
Yeah.
Can't even keep a job.
Oh, jeez. Fluoride spill at a water facility literally burns holes in parking lot cement. A recent chemical spill at a water treatment facility in Rock Island, Illinois, required. Oh, we're almost out of time.
Yep.
Okay.
So just read the headlines there.
Yeah. So fluoride spill at water facility literally burns holes in the parking lot cement. So I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. It's we've got about 1 minute left and 30 seconds actually.
And
so,
join us again.
Yeah. Please join us tomorrow night.
Thursday night, and then join both of us on Tuesday night for 2 hours.
Friday night.
Friday
week.
Night. Oh,
with
Friday,
George Dixon.
Friday Night with George. Sorry.
Yeah, Friday Night with George Dixon this week. And that's it.
And 2 hour Tuesday on Tuesday.
And 2 hour Tuesday, 1 hour Wednesday, 1 hour Thursday, and 1 hour Friday. Right here at 8 o'clock.
So good night, folks, and have a great evening.
Yep. Good night. Hey, everybody.